Translation. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King, the activities of Bharat Maharaj are wonderful. He gave up everything difficult for others to give up. He gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family. His opulence was so great that even the demigods envied it. Yet he gave it up. It was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee. He could renounce everything because, here's the clincher, he could renounce everything because he was so attracted to the beauty, opulence, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna is so attracted that one can give up all desirable things for his sake. Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant for those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse confirms Krishna's all-attractiveness. Maharaj Bharat was so attracted to Krishna that he gave up all material possessions. Generally, materialistic people are attracted by such possessions. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitar tanasya mahoyam aham mameti. Bhagavatam 5.5.8. One becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. The attraction for material things is certainly due to illusion. There is no value in attraction to material things, but the conditioned soul is diverted by them. One's life is successful if he is absorbed in the attraction of Krishna's strength, beauty, and pastimes, as described in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadis are attracted to merging into the existence of the Lord, but Krishna is more attractive than the desire to merge. The word abhava means not to take birth again in the material world. A devotee doesn't care whether he is going to be reborn or not. He is simply satisfied with the Lord's service in any condition. That is real mukti. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasagira nikalav vasu vasyat gavasit nikalav apyavasaso jivan mukta sa ujjate. One who acts to serve Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence, and words is a liberated person, even within this material world. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187. A person who always desires to serve Krishna is interested in ways to convince people that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead and that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. That is his ambition. It doesn't matter whether he is in heaven or in hell. This is called Uttamashloka Lalasa. Omagyantimrandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha mukham karoti vachalam pungum langayate girim yatkrapatamaham vande shri guru dinatarnam Shirupa Shri Sanatana Bhattaraguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Nasaraguna Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Mutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Dadati Swapadantikam Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurat Vishay Namaha
Hey Krishna, Karuna, Sindhu, Dinabandhu, Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta Kanchana, Gaurange, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu, Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Hari Priye, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tamasmi Radhika Natha Karmana Manasagira Krishna Kante Tavai Vasmi Uvame Bhagatir Mama Govinda Vallabhe Radhe Parteye Tvamaham Sada Tvadiyayati Janatu Govindo Mam Tvayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karudamritavahini Kripaya Nita Padavja Dasyam Mahyam Pradiyatam Tavai Vasmi Najivami Tvayavina Iti Vigyaya Devi Tvam Dayamam Charanam Jikam Vanjakopaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyay Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So in the previous verse we were reading about Maharaj Bharat's pronunciation. And here in this verse we are told how it was possible for him to be so renounced. His renunciation is based not on frustration or aversion, it is based on his attraction for Krishna. He takes so much relish in Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, his beauty, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation, that the material world pales in comparison. And so that is real renunciation. That renunciation which is based on attraction for Krishna, that is real, that is substantial. Otherwise, renunciation which is based on frustration with the material energy, that will only be temporary. It will be a pendulum swing. The pendulum swings one way, and then it will swing back to the other way, to the opposite extreme, and then it will again swing to the other side. The swing is from bhoga to tyaga, to tyaga, back to bhoga, back to tyaga, and so on. Enjoyment or sense gratification to renunciation to sense gratification to renunciation to sense gratification to renunciation. And that's basically our material condition. Swinging backwards and forwards. Bhoga to tyaga, to bhoga to tyaga, to hankering, to lamenting, to hankering, to lamenting, to hankering, to tyaga, to bhoga, to tyaga. Hankering and lamentation. In bhoga we hanker. I want more of that. I want more of that position, more of that money, more of that power, more of those possessions. And then when we encounter obstacles, or it is taken from us by someone else who's more powerful, or we feel dejected because someone has more than us, then we take to tyaga. Who needs that anyway? Anyway, it's temporary. Sour grapes. You know the story of the fox jumping for the grapes, hankering for the grapes. He takes a leap up towards the grapevine and his mouth closes, but still no grapes inside his mouth. He's missed. So then he takes further distance between himself and the grapevine, takes a running dash and leaps into the air, open jaws, and then when his jaws shut closed, there's still no grapes inside. grapes are just a bit too high for him. Takes greater distance, a faster running dash, jaws open, and then they clamp shut and still no grapes. And after a few attempts in this way, he walks away and says, "Pah, anyway, who needs those grapes? They're sour." That is our tyaga. That is the tyaga of people in this material world. That is the tyaga even of the jnani and of the yogi, of the Buddhist. It's based on frustration that the material energy cannot really satisfy. So that realization is correct. The material energy cannot satisfy. But when you're not filling that vacuum, that desire for enjoyment, that desire for love with something else, it will not remain for long. Attachment and aversion are two sides of the same coin. It's material. Two sides of the same material coin. And that's a more complete description. Not just two sides of the same coin, but the same material coin. Two sides of material attachment, in fact. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described that, you know, you have that material, those two sides of material attachment on one side. The other side is affection for Krishna. It's not that attachment is material and detachment is spiritual. No, those are both material conditions. They're on the same side. The other side is attachment for Krishna. So as your affection for Krishna increases, then your material attachment will decrease. That's the process of bhakti yoga. Increasing our affection for Krishna. And as your affection for Krishna is less, then your material attachments are increasing. So the bhakti yoga process is enhancing our affection for Krishna. And you do that through association. We develop attachment or affection for a thing by association, whether it is material or spiritual. We take on the quality of the company that we keep. Any friendship, any love that you have in your life, you didn't have that before you met that person. Or at least heard about them. Yeah? By association, either in person or by hearing of their qualities and their glories, then you develop some kind of affection. You might say that that person is your hero or your idol or your star or a family, my father, my brother, my sister, my wife, my husband. By hearing about them, by associating with them, your attachment grows deeper and deeper. Anyone can have practical experience of that. In the same way, by hearing about Krishna, by associating with Krishna in his archan form, in the sound of his holy name, by associating with his people, with his devotees, our affection for Krishna increases. The example given in the Shastra is of Rukmini. Rukmini had never met Krishna before, but she heard about him. She heard about him from Narad Muni. Narad Muni travels throughout the universe, chanting Krishna's glories. And he gives Krishna's love by singing Krishna's glories, either to a Magrari, the hunter, or to a queen who's been kidnapped by devas, Kayadu. Narada instructed her that Prahlad Maharaj were here while he was still in his mother's womb. Narada Muni gives instruction to King Prachinabarhi. So he's always traveling and speaking about Krishna. And so once, or who knows, it may have been more than once, visiting the kingdom of Vidarbha. The king asked, what is happening? What is the news? Narada, he speaks about Krishna. Krishna has done this, Krishna has done that. Krishna is the most wonderful. Rukmini, she hears it. And she falls in love and decides, I will marry no one other than Krishna. I will not marry anyone other than Krishna. She set her heart on Krishna. And sometime later, her brother Shishupal, who hated Krishna because of jealousy. Her brother Rukmini. Arranged her marriage with Shishupal, who hated Krishna. Rukmini didn't know what to do. She called a trusted Brahmin friend, to secretly come to her palace and take a message that he should go very quickly to Dwarka to deliver that message to Krishna. And Krishna, he received that Brahmin very nicely, as Krishna received all the Brahmins visiting Dwarka very nicely, with great respect. And he took that message. And he also had heard about Rukmini. And he said that since hearing about Rukmini, he had also not been able to get her from his mind. So he said that he will go to Dwarka and take Rukmini. I'm not sure if she gave the analogy or he, that like a lion, yeah, taking its prey from the jaws of the jackal. The jackal trying to usurp the lion's share. So Shishupal was trying to take what was Krishna's. That is the heart of Rukmini. Rukmini had already given the scheme how to do it, the plan, the plot. The palace is too well guarded. You will not be able to kidnap me from there. But on the day of the wedding, or the day before, not sure, but before the wedding, it is our tradition, it is a custom in our family that we will go to the temple of Devi to offer prayers. At that time, I will come out into public and it will be possible for you to kidnap me as I come out of the temple. Thank you. So when Rukmini came out of the temple, all the kings, they had lined up in front of the temple to see her. And they were so bewildered, enchanted by her beauty. She was so beautiful that they kind of lost their intelligence looking at her. And while they were all stupefied looking at Rukmini, Krishna, he drove up in his chariot, picked up Rukmini, brought her onto his chariot, and drove away while the kings were still trying to figure out what had just happened. And then Rukmini, he was the first to kind of realize she's just been kidnapped. By Krishna, of all people. So he made a grand speech. You can all, because they were the kings who were still kind of trying to pull themselves together. It's described that some of them had fallen off their horses on seeing how beautiful Rukmini was. She was so beautiful, they were so stunned, they just fell off their horses. So they're still trying to pull themselves together. Rukmini, he made a very grand speech. You can all be, you know, bewildered or whatever. What are you supposed to be? Kshatriyas, you're supposed to be kings. And here this one Yadava came through and kidnapped the princess. I will not stand for this. I swear that I will not return to this king, to this city, unless I bring Rukmini back. Drove off on his chariot with his armies. Krishna had Balaram ready, waiting with another army to just, you know, deal with any such situation as this. So, you know, Rukmini came out with his army and other kings kind of pulling themselves together behind. Balaram's there with the Dwarka army. So finally, yeah, Balaram defeated them. I think Rukmini actually got past Balaram and had some kind of encounter with Krishna, some fight. And Krishna, yeah. Krishna tied him up and was preparing to punish him. And Rukmini was crying, "Please don't kill my brother. I know he's a real bleep." He's a demon. But he is my brother. Whatever he is, he's my brother. Please don't kill him. So Krishna's kind of like figuring out what he's going to do with him. Rukmini doesn't want him killed. And then Balaram arrives and says, "What's going on?" And Balaram sees Rukmini's very distressed. Rukmini's tied up. Krishna's kind of going to punish him somehow. So Balaram, he has this nature. He's a negotiator, a peacemaker. Balaram's always trying to bring opposing parties together, get them to talk, sort things out. He was trying to do that between Duryodhana and Yudhisthira, the Yadavas and the Kauravas. In different occasions, not only this time, different occasions, Balaram's trying to broker a peace. When it didn't work out before the Kurukshetra war, he was like, "I'm out of here. I'm going for pilgrimage." He went on a yatra all over India with some Brahmins. "We're out of here. Why can't people just make peace?" Quite impartial. He trained Duryodhana as his martial arts guru. Trained Duryodhana how to use the mace, how to use the club. So Balaram here, he's okay, some diplomacy is required here. So he actually took Rukmini's side. He saw she's very sad. It's a day that, you know, she's, you know, united with her husband, her lover, and such a tragedy. So he takes her side. He says, "Naughty Krishna, what are you doing to your wife's brother?" So he chastises Krishna. He's the older brother. He can do that. He can pull rank. By doing that, he wants to pacify Rukmini. Oh, okay, Balaram's gonna, you know, take my side and make sure things are, so they don't end so tragically. "Krishna, don't do this." So Krishna says, "Okay, I won't kill him, but I will kill his pride. for a kshatriya that can be worse than death. With Ashwatthama, remember Ashwatthama, the son of Drona, killed the children of the five Pandavas while they were sleeping in a tent after the Kurukshetra war, the very end of that war. Ashwatthama went in at night and killed the sleeping sons of the five Pandavas, and then took his Brahmastra and aimed it at the embryo of Uttara, the wife of Abhimanyu, the embryo was this, that had the grandson of Arjuna. He wanted to destroy all the descendants of the Pandavas. So Arjuna captured Ashwatthama, dragged him before Draupadi, because those five children were her children that had been killed in their sleep. Took him before Draupadi, and there were different opinions. Some were saying, kill him. Draupadi actually became compassionate. She was thinking, this is someone's son. I've had my sons killed. This also is someone's son. If we have him killed, then another mother, she will also cry. His mother will cry. So let not her experience the same thing, the same grief that I'm feeling. So there were different opinions, what to do with this Ashwatthama. So in the end they said, okay, we will kill him and not kill him. We will not kill him physically, but we will kill his pride. And they cut off a jewel that he had in his hair, sent him into banishment. And the wonder of all wonders is that in the next, the end of the next Dwapara Yuga, beginning of the next Kali Yuga, he will be Vyas. That Ashwatthama, still wandering somewhere in the universe, and he will be the next Vyasadeva. Vyas is a position. Our current Vyas is called Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Krishna because he's darkish, Dvaipayana because he was born on an island. Another Mahabharata story. We won't go there. But Vyas itself is a position, that person who compiles the Veda. So the future Vyas will be our Ashwatthama. It's a great story of redemption from Ashwatthama to Vyas. All of our gurus, they are honored as representatives of that Vyas. And that Vyas will be Ashwatthama. So with Rukmi, Krishna also decided, we will kill him but not kill him. We will kill him by killing his pride. Krishna cut off. Yeah, in our Krishna book, illustration, you have half of his hair. Bhagavatam says cut off half of his hair. And so the way the artist has depicted it, half of his hair. I'm not sure if Krishna exactly did it like that. And then half of his mustache. I think Krishna might have just, cut off different locks. Cut out, hair from different places. I gave him a bit of a scary haircut. But our BBT illustrators are half the hair. Down the middle. And left him. So Rukmi, he kept his vow. He never returned to the kingdom of Vaidarbha, to that city. And he made a new city, became the ruler there. Anyone know the name of that city? Anyway, slight diversion. The point of the story is, one of the points we learned from the story is how to awaken affection for Krishna. for Rukmini, it was just by Shravan. It was just by hearing. Just by hearing about Krishna from Narad, she lost affection for material relationships. You can hear, you can read her words in the Bhagavatam. She says, what is the use? I think later on she's speaking to other queens, I think. How she fell in love with Krishna, or how she came to be with Krishna. She says, what is the use of being with a material man? A conditioned soul with a material body. A body that grows old, wrinkled, dwindles, dies. Who wants to be with someone who has a body like that? She'll say, my affection is only for Krishna. So that is the process for us. We find ourselves in a material world. We find ourselves to have material attachments. We find ourselves to have hankerings in the material nature and lamentations as well. That's the material conditioned state. And the solution, the only solution, is to become Krishna conscious. And then Prabhupada makes the point, for one who's Krishna conscious, who has that affection for Krishna, they are mukta, even while they are still in the material nature. That hankering and lamentation is over for them. It's only Krishna. Prabhupada ends the purport. He says, whether they're in heaven or in hell, they're satisfied. Svarga, pavarga, narake. And so you have our acharyas, they pray. Chakudan dilaye janme janme prabhuse divye gyan hride prakashito. My dear spiritual master, you are my Lord, birth after birth. Narottam is not praying, my dear spiritual master, please make sure this is my last birth. He's not praying for liberation. My dear teacher, you are my Lord and Master, birth after birth. Whether it is birth after birth or the last, but whatever. I'm satisfied in your service. And I just want to be your servant. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Na danam, na janam, na sundarim kavitam ba jagadishakamaye. Mama janmani janmanishvare. Bhavatad bhakti rahaitu ki tvayi. I do not desire wealth. I do not desire followers. I do not desire sundara kavita. Sundara kavita. In the translation that we chant, we say, I do not desire beautiful women. So what are the Matajis thinking when they chant? I do not desire... So that is one translation. Sundara kavita can also mean beautiful poetic allusions or glorifications of myself. I do not desire to be glorified in elegant poetry. Or, you might just say, I do not desire beautiful men. However, yeah, same idea. I do not desire to be glorified in beautiful poetry. Sundara kavitam. What do I desire? Mama janmani janmanishvare. Birth after birth, my Lord. Birth after birth. Bhavatan bhakti rahaituki tvayi. I want ahaituki bhakti. Ahaituki is so important. It is causeless devotional service to you. Causeless means it is not bhakti that is motivated by karma. Oh, now I'm feeling very devotional because I have some great material desire. I want to pass my exam. I want to get a new car. I want to get a new job. So let me go to temple and pray. I have some great material objective that I want to achieve. I will start to chant japa every day. That is bhakti that has a cause. And so it is in fact not bhakti. That is karma. If the bhakti has karma as its cause, then it is not bhakti. It is karma that is using bhakti in order to achieve its objective. Or, on the other side of the material spectrum, the tyaga side, when one is feeling great suffering, I lost my job, I lost my some family relation, someone has passed away, someone's left me, whatever it is. Some disease has overcome me. Now I become very devotional. I start to chant, I start to read Gita, one chapter a day. That is, what is the cause there? The cause is a desire for liberation. Dhyana is the cause. You get some realization. This material life, it is very painful. Let me be a bit more spiritual now. So the cause is jnana. So that is not ahaituki bhakti. It is jnana that is using bhakti. Bhakti itself is ahaituki. It is causeless. Or as Prabhupada translates it, unmotivated. Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhakti radhok saje ahaituki apratihata ya yatma suprasirati. Parikit Maharaj has asked, what is the supreme occupation, the duty of a person who is about to die? And in essence, Sukadeva has answered, Sutta Goswami has, Sukadeva has answered, the supreme occupation, the supreme dharma for a human society is bhakti for Adhoksaja, for the unconquerable Krishna. The symptoms of that bhakti are ahaituki. It is causeless. It is not caused by karma. It is not caused by jnana. And it is ceaseless. It is uninterrupted. That bhakti completely nurtures and satisfies the soul. That bhakti, that pure bhakti, ahaituki bhakti, satisfies the heart. That bhakti is caused only by bhakti itself. Bhakti sanjayate, bhakti. The cause of bhakti is bhakti. Almost a tautology. What is the cause of bhakti? Bhakti. It can only be bhakti. The bhakti in the heart of another Vaishnava. That is the cause of bhakti in your heart, and your heart, and my heart. The bhakti that itself lies dormant in your own heart will be ignited, reawakened. Brahmanda brahmite kon bhagavan ji guru krishna prashade pai bhakti lata bhij. After wandering aimlessly in the material nature through so many brahmandas, not just we think in a small way, this one universe, Through so many universes we have been wandering, and after such wandering, from the highest to the lowest, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravarti Norjuna, we come in contact with a bhakta. By the mercy of Krishna, we come in contact with a bhakta who is our guru and gives us a seed of bhakti. Does that mean that bhakti is not already in the heart? You need to get a seed from somebody? Bhakti is already there in the heart, but the seed that is given by the guru, by Krishna, causes that dormant bhakti to ignite. Otherwise, it can appear to be a contradiction. Yeah, that jivair surupa hoy Krishna nityadas, the eternal nature of the soul is to serve the Lord, and that we need. But then, on the other hand, that we're getting a seed from outside. Both things together. It is your nature. When you come in contact with the other bhakta, it will ignite. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti. Bhakti will cause bhakti to awaken. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, let me always have that ahaituki bhakti. That bhakti that is not caused by karma, that is not caused by gyan, but it is caused only by bhakti itself. Let me always have that birth after birth. He's also not praying, please liberate me. Please let this be my last birth. He's saying, birth after birth, let me just serve you with exclusive ananya bhakti, ahaituki bhakti. So then we might be wondering, what about Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita? So that was what was going through your mind? Four types of people that surrender unto me. What's the sense? Chatur vidha bhajante mam jnana shukitanarjuna artur jignyasur artarti jnani. Artur jignyasur artarti and jnani. Four types of people that Krishna says surrenders unto him. Seems to be that they are all having, or the material cause of wanting some material reward, or in the case of the jnani, wanting liberation. But Krishna is accepting all of them. So how to understand that? Some suggestions? Okay, they come in contact. Good, that's good, Keshav. Someone else like to expand upon that, elaborate on that?
Krishna is actually giving credit no matter for what reason they actually come to me. So going to Krishna itself is commendable.
Okay.
So he's giving the credit there. But in the following verses, Krishna also says of the fourth one is superior. And the
right.
Three would actually develop devotion by coming in association.
Very good. Yeah, thank you. So coming to Krishna just as an artur, or an artarti. Coming to Krishna just as somebody who has some material distress is not enough, actually. Because once your material distress is alleviated, once you pass the exams, once you got the new house, once you got married, or whatever it is, once that was fulfilled, then you will forget Krishna again until the next calamity arises. Until the next material need arises, and then you're back to the mandir. Back to the temple or the church or the mosque or whatever. So it's not enough that you have some pressing material need that it's inspiring you to do some bhakti, or you have some pressing problem that's inspiring you to pray, it's not enough. But it's better than nothing. How does Kabiraj Goswami explain? Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udhari tivrena bhakti yogena yajate purusha param. Whether you have desire or not, akama sarva kama va, whether you desire or you don't desire, moksha kama udhari, or if you're desiring liberation, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta pur, if you take to bhakti, you can get liberation. You can get yajeta purush, not just liberation, purusha param. That's actually better than liberation. The supreme destination, param, param param. Tad Vishnu paramam paragam sada pasyanti suraya divi vachakshura tatam tad vipraso vipanyavoja dhruvagam sasamindate. Vishnu yat paramam padam. These suras are always looking upward to Parampadam, the supreme destination from the Veda. That is the supreme abode of the Lord. So Kaviraj Goswami is saying, whether you have desire or not, if you take to bhakti yoga, tivrena bhakti yogena, you can achieve the Purusha Padam, the supreme personality of Godhead. So both the Gita and Kaviraj Goswami, they're suggesting that even approaching the Lord with material desire is a good thing, or desire for liberation is a good thing. And it is, yes, certainly better than completely ignoring the Lord altogether or neglecting the Lord altogether. But the real benefit comes that you approach the Lord with some material desire or inclination, but in doing that, you come in contact with pure devotees. You come in contact with Ananya Bhaktas. You come in contact with those whose bhakti is not motivated by karma or jnana, but by bhakti itself. And in their association, you develop actual affection for Krishna. It's not now about, well, yeah, what I want is a house, but I know I have to do it through Krishna. But it's, yeah, whatever. The house, no house, my devotion is for Krishna. So Krishna becomes the prime objective, and anything else becomes secondary. And that's the transformation that needs to take place. Then it is Ananya Bhakti. Or Ahaituki Bhakti, causeless devotion. So, but it's not guaranteed that that will happen, yeah? People can come to the Lord with material problems or material desires and pray, but that contact, that faith is not initiated, no? They may have the Saru Sangha, they say, Saruji, Ashur, Bhav, Baba. Yeah? Prabhupada, he would joke about that. People would come and touch his feet and say, Ashur, Bhav, Baba, give me blessings. They're wanting a blessing for material achievements. And so it's not really too much inclined to have people touching his feet that way. Materialists coming and touching his feet for material benedictions. Prabhupada was not very favorable to that. But he would let his disciples touch his feet. Because they're touching his feet, they want the blessing of love for Krishna. So if, yeah, approaching the Lord for material objectives, we come in contact with the devotees and then the bhakti is ignited, Then there is real benefit. That may come in so many ways. When Haridas Thakur was thrown into jail by the Muslim ruler, then the prisoners, they said, Ashirad Baba, give blessings. And Haridas Thakur said, I bless you to stay in the prison. And they were quite disappointed. What kind of sadhu are you? Sadhu should give blessings for material achievements, for material prosperity. And you are blessing us to stay in the prison. What kind of blessing is this? Haridas Thakur said, outside of the prison, you were such troublemakers. You did so many nasty things to people, even to sadhus. You would mistreat the sadhus. Now that you are in prison, you are showing some respect for the sadhus, so it seems that it is a good thing. Therefore, I have said, may you stay in the prison. But a few weeks ago, we had Bhakta Prabhu here, and he was giving a seminar on communications. And part of that, he spoke about his chaplaincy work, his work as a spiritual caregiver. And so he told the story of, in that role, he goes to hospitals and officially, as an official staff member, he goes to the hospital and gives counsel and guidance to people in their final days or in their difficult times of sickness, and describing some of the transformation that takes place for people in his association. So if he wasn't a bhakta, an ananya bhakta, that transformation wouldn't happen that way. But for some of the patients that he cares for in that situation, there's a real genuine transformation. Their bhakti, ananya bhakti, is ignited. And he read the one specific letter from a boy who was in prison for murder. This boy's parents were at some stage connected with the Hare Krishna movement. And he might have even been... So at a young age, for a short period, they were practicing bhakti yoga. But then left, didn't have any more contact, divorced, and then he grew up in very difficult situations and got involved in all kinds of crazy things. And then at some point there was someone that he and some others beat to death, a crime of passion. And so in prison, then, it makes you very reflective and contemplative. And Bhakta received notice that another chaplain said, there's a boy in this prison. It's a maximum security, one of the higher level prisons in the Victoria correctional system. And said, this boy here, he's actually a Hare Krishna. You got to go and... counsel him. You got to go and support him. So Bhakta said he entered that prison and he was so afraid because they open the gate and then let you in, and there's all these kind of, these are the murderers and the those who have committed the most serious crimes. And they make kind of jokes about him as he walks down the aisle past the cells, shouting things out and whatnot. And he comes to the room with this boy, and he doesn't know much at all about Krishna. Just as a child, his parents had some association, but that was what he was holding on to at this moment. Bhakta would go and visit him regularly, and then a few weeks ago he read us a letter that boy had written. And you read his words, and he's a devotee. He writes there, it's a poem actually, and he was saying how he was just glorifying Krishna and his affection for Krishna, and Krishna is his only purpose, his only objective and goal. And he glorified Sri Chaitanya and Chaitanya's mission to share Sankirtan with the world. and that one day when he gets out of jail, he would like to participate in Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. He wrote how he's given up all attachment for meat eating and intoxication and gambling and illicit sex, and he's taken vows to live a pure and saintly life, and most importantly, to chant his japa 16 rounds every day. And so you read, you hear those words. He's speaking as a as a realized bhakta, someone who has that ahaituki bhakti, that causeless devotion in his heart. It may have come about in his moment of desperation that he reached out, but by association with a devotee, Bhakta Prabhu, and then Prabhupada's books that he's been reading, full transformation has taken place. So in any condition, that transformation can take place if one receives proper association. Proper association. The process is sadhu sangha, and then bhajana kriya, association with the devotees, and then to engage in bhajan, the practices of devotional service, the practices of bhakti yoga, which are to chant, to hear, to remember, and all of those activities deepen our affection for Krishna. And we can achieve the same thing that has been described here by Bharat Maharaj. As our affection for Krishna increases, then without difficulty, it is easy to give up the material nature. Not as a struggle, not out of frustration, but with full realization. The heart is filled with love for Krishna. And as that inner satisfaction and love fills one's being, then the material nature loses its appeal. Bharat Maharaj may engage with the material nature. Actually, he took it on just as a duty. He didn't have a desire to even get involved to begin with. Was it Bharat Maharaj? Yeah. Brahma came down and told him, you have to get involved.
Yeah.
That was Priyavrata. Priyavrata, he took it on as a duty. He didn't have that attachment because he was satisfied in Krishna. But Brahma, his grandfather, Manu, his father, said, you need to do this. That's your role as a prince. We need you to get involved here. So he went and took it all on. And he didn't do it half-heartedly or didn't do it with resentment.
Oh, my grandfather said I have to do it.
Whatever. No, he fully engaged himself, fully applied himself. Sometimes when devotees realize they might need to enter in another ashram, grihastha ashram, as an example, they'll enter the ashram but with resentment. Resent their wife or their husband. They've been a brahmachari for 7 or 8 years, 12 years. Now they're in this other ashram. They resent the wife, resent the husband, resent themselves. They're there, but they just try not to be there. Hang out more with the Ramacharis in the temple and the services there, and go home as little as possible. Do the duty. And, they know they need to be there. That's kind of obvious, but then they just resent themselves for for being there. And it becomes hellish, actually, for themselves and anyone else involved, the children. But it can be a struggle once they realize they need to get a job, resent the job. And then after a period, turn angry again, then it changes. Then they're angry at their old temple president or the temple or maybe their guru for a period. From self-resentment and family, then once they learn to live with themselves, then they turn the resentment back towards the devotees. And then they get lost for a while. So that's unfortunate, and it happens often. And not just for their own fault, it's more because of an immature understanding of how to engage. How to engage with the material nature. So, Priyavrata, was it Priyavrata? Yeah. Priyavrata engaged fully. Bharat Maharaj engaged fully. And then when it's time to let go, Bharat Maharaj can let go very easily. Accepting it as a role, as a service, Arjuna, he fulfilled his responsibility. He had some moments there where he was in lots of doubt and confusion, which Krishna relieved for him. But then he didn't, you know, go into that battle with resentment. Okay, it's I'm conditioned to have to fight this battle. I'd much rather be in an ashram somewhere. No, he fully engaged and applied himself. So whatever our situation, we engage. What was that story Prabhupada told? There was a girl dancing, and her veil kept falling off, kept slipping off. And she kept trying to fix her veil while dancing. And the people who were watching this said, if you're going to dance, dance. Don't worry about your veil. So Prabhupada told that story. If you're going to dance, dance. If you're going to be as a grihastha in the material nature, be there, be a grihastha. Don't keep trying to fix your veil and you know, be somewhere else. This is an internal state. Bhakti is an internal state that is cultivated internally through the practices of bhakti yoga. Externally, we may do other things. According to ashram. Not that externally we engage in all kinds of nonsense and say, yeah, internally I'm a bhakta. That's another deviation. And then when the time is right, for some it is earlier, for some it is later, when the time is right, then walk away from it without resentment. That time has to be, you have to be ready for that time. Whether it is, yeah, as in late age, you take to an ashram of renunciation. But at the moment of death, every one of us is going to come to that point of death. At that moment, you need to be ready to walk away and let go without resentment, without hankering, without lamentation. And we can only do that if your heart is filled with love for Krishna. Let go without any sense of loss or fear or and walk forward to embrace Krishna. Whether the Krishna wants you to take another birth in the material nature to serve, Mama Janmani Janmanishware, Janme Janme Prabhu Se, or whether Krishna wants to take you back to God, either way. It's fine. So that, yeah, what is the Bengali proverb? I don't know the Bengali. Your bhajan will be tested at the moment of death. That is the ultimate pariksha, parika, test. Do you know the proverb? Prabhupada would quote it. Your bhajan will be tested at the moment of death. So,
there's a funny one that Prabhupada once said that Moram Kabe Horitam. So he said, like someone, because Prabhupada he was using that if you do only the chanting when you're old,
yeah.
So he was saying Moram Kabe Horitam means at the time of death, if you just chant very, that's not going to work once.
Okay.
You have to, so
Moron Kale Horinam. Okay. You say, I'll do all sense gratification now, and at the moment of death, I will do Moron Kale Horinam. Put in some tilak. Yamaraj. I'm a devotee. Okay, my favorite Bengali proverb, one of my favorites is, Oti bhakti chore lakon. Too much devotion is the sign of a thief. That's when your bhakti is motivated by kam or jnana. Yeah, then ati bhakti, too much. Chore lokam, that is the symptom of a thief.
How do you find out
How do you find out if it's too much? Yeah. Well, that particular proverb is used even in common dealings. If someone is too nice to you, then you can be a little bit suspicious. Devotion to Krishna cannot be too much. It's never enough. Okay, any comment or question? Yes, Prabhu.
That's the last class. One of the questions I had was regarding when his love for Krishna was awakened just by Shravan.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like, and that was just it. It was just that easy.
For Rukmini.
For Rukmini.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of Shravan. We come to Bhagavatam class. We do kirtans. We read books. And we've got 12 hour kirtan coming up as well. So what's the difference between our Shravan and Rukmini Shravan?
Yeah. Okay. The question here is about Rukmini Shravan and how just hearing was enough to get her to set her mind completely. And what about us? We do lots of Shravan and we don't necessarily feel that transformation. If you're a little bit reflective, you might find a similar experience even in your own life. I don't know your story, but I'm sure that there are devotees here in this assembly who, for whom Shravan actually did cause a change of heart and a transformation, and they said, okay, that's it. I'm going to be a devotee. I don't want to wander aimlessly in the material nature anymore. And it's a moment that it happens, that moment of decision. So maybe they've heard other times before, or they've had some encounter before, but there's one moment where that shravan, I'm not saying it's that way in every case, but for many, there's one moment where that sangha or that shravan just, there's a transformation and it's over. Material life is over. There's a decision made, I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna. I want to be a devotee of Krishna. And so yeah, after that decision, then there's lots of, we need to do a lot more shravan to reinforce that and deepen that commitment and that affection for Krishna. But the actual moment of decision can be a moment of just hearing from a pure-hearted Vaishnava. Yeah? One last comment or question? Yes, Prabhu?
Well, just to add, in Bhagavatam also it's mentioned on the hearing and receptive hearing.
Yeah.
So is it like is that the difference?
Sure, also. I also thought of that as the question was asked. Rukmini's hearing from Narad. So that's very powerful Shravan that she gets to hear. And then she herself, obviously she's Lakshmi, an expansion of Srimati Radharani, Chandravali, whichever way, ultimately Radharani. And so, yeah, so for her, she, not much impetus is required. Not much of a spark is required to set the fire ablaze. But yeah, so the qualification of the speaker and of the hearer in that moment is also important. But to bring it back to a very practical level, you know, it sounds very fantastic in the life of Rukmini, and then when we hear that the speaker and the hearer need to be qualified, but just reflecting on your own life. So many devotees will tell you that for them it was a moment of hearing, or from Prabhupada in his book, his books, or you know, in association with another devotee, there was a moment where that shraddha was ignited and a decision was made that I'm going to surrender to Krishna. Okay. Thank you all very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktavim Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.